Welcome back to Dating Games, the Modern Relationships Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps, and this week I'm going to say is another special episode because it is actually our penultimate one of this series. So next week's is going to be our last. I've got two wonderful guests lined up, especially for that. The first time we are having two guests on one episode, just to, you know, make for extra chaos, and indeed it was. This week we've just got the one guest, but a really wonderful one. I was about to say what your name is. That's not the format at all. We'll crop all of this. But maybe we'll leave it. Look at this. It's like it took all this time. We're nearly at the end of the series, and then I've forgotten my own format, which I made up. What about that? Oh, I'm tired. It's warm. It's, what is it today? Like 23 degrees. It won't be warm to you. It's warm in this country. We don't have aircon here. It's not a thing. To introduce my guest, who's not allowed to speak whilst I interact with him and then glare to say, shh. Our guest this week is the host of Have a Blessed Gay podcast. It's a show all about the intersection between sexuality, spirituality, and religion, which is really fascinating. It has loads of great guests. My favourite is Nina West, which I'm going to say episode 3, maybe? Mm-hmm. Pretty early on, so go give that a listen. And is also the writer, director, and star of Don't Suck, a YouTube comedy series, which is very funny. I would compare it to the Netflix series Bonding in terms of like production value. And most recently has been part of a book called The Deconstructionist Playbook, all about religion. And he's laughing at me because I said it wrong. All about deconstructing like antiquated ideas around religion and looking at it in a new and more open and accepting way, which very much links to the vibe of the podcast. So please welcome a wonderful guest, Tyler Martin.
Woohoo! I'm so excited to be here with you.
Oh, it's great. That is possibly the longest time it's ever taken me to record one of those intros correctly. So thank you for bearing with me.
It's a great start. You know, we're starting off slow. You want to be the tortoise and not the hare in this race, you know?
I like that. Okay, so to start off, you're going to share a dating story.
I am. So I had a hard time thinking of a dating story that wasn't dramatic and sad. But then I thought of one that was kind of so sad that it circled back around to being funny again. So here we go. Okay. I was about 16 at the time, and I had a quote unquote girlfriend. She and I had a common best friend, but that common best friend and I were together in secret, a little secret gay romance. And she was a lovely beard at that time. We eventually did kind of become legitimate boyfriend and girlfriend, but at that time it was illegitimate. And we had planned this whole elaborate thing to meet up at her house when her mom was away on like a business trip or something. He and I were going to get to have like a romantic night together, basically. So took a lot of planning. We did it though. We went over there. It was super cute. We like watched a movie. And then we were in her bedroom making out and fondling. And as of that point, I was still a virgin. So it was just touching, basically. But we were going at it pretty hard, nevertheless. And as we were making out, he said something. And I didn't know what he had said. So I pulled away from him and genuinely just asked, wait, what did you say? And he very quickly got a horrified look on his face and said, Tyler, I'm so sorry. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? So then I got more serious and I just repeated, what did you say? And he informed me that he had said another boy's name. And I was so devastated. But what was so funny, two things. I thought I was being cheated on with the guy that he named. So that was kind of a verifying moment for me. But then number two, what makes it sad and funny in retrospect is that only about like 30 minutes passed probably. And I continued making out with him. and having a grand gay old time. Because I, number one, was just like sad and insecure, I guess. And then number two was like, we put too much time into planning this motherfucking like rendezvous. We're gonna make out, damn it. So there you go. That's my sad, somewhat funny dating experience.
I like it. I'm fascinated in the thought process where you were like mad for 30 minutes and then you're like, oh, but we put so much time into this.
We have to continue. Yeah, I mean, that was a whole complicated relationship. I mean, honestly, that was just like a little section of just so much complication. So really, that seemed like a usual night for us.
And do you think part of it was the slight victory of you suspected the cheating and then you had it confirmed? That sounds like lifted you up as well.
Well, and it didn't help too, because the person that he cheated on me with, so we were all in theater and it was a guy who we were super competitive in theater together. And so that didn't help my little ego, but also, yeah, it felt good to be right. It always feels good to be right, even when it's not good for you.
Is that your message about relationships? Just be right.
That's really, if you want to be successful in relationships, just make sure you're right. Even if it's to your own detriment, make sure you're right.
You know what, though? Believe it or not, another guest recently had a similar thing, which was quite clever, where she really likes to be right. She just decides which things matter to her. And that way she's always right about the stuff that matters. And everything else go.
I'll never argue about something I don't know for sure about. Like if I don't know 100% that I am correct, then yeah, I'll let it go. But if I know 100%, then I'm like, oh yeah, I'm all in. Like, we're going to fight till 3 weeks from now about it. Until you realize that I'm right about it.
And are there ever times when you think you're right and then it turns out you're not? And what do you do with those? Or do you just go away and do more research and come back?
I mean, honestly, not to toot my own horn, but it doesn't happen all that often. But when it has happened, I'm a research person. So yeah, I will like go and make sure that they're right. So then my apology that comes after is based in fact. And I'll apologize. I'll apologize and say that I was wrong. But honestly, sometimes I feel like my apologies are more just like to prove a point of like, this is how you should apologize when you're wrong. If that makes any sense. But like, this is the diplomatic way to say I'm sorry.
You sound a little bit exhausting. So what you're telling me is basically like,
how dare you.
So you're almost never wrong, but occasionally if you are, then you will admit it. But in reality, you're segueing into being like, this is actually a teachable moment. I'm still right in this situation because you're going to learn from how excellent my apology is.
I mean, kind of, yeah. Is that problematic? I don't know. Probably.
And so what were you like in your young dating years then when you were more open about your sexuality?
Even when in like arguing or just like conversation, I am a Slytherin for all the Harry Potter fans out there.
Oh, me too.
Yeah. So I am really good at arguing and being sly and creative and wording. And so that has always helped me in relationships, for sure, for sure.
I shouldn't have admitted to it now that you're giving us a bad name.
No, it's a good thing. It's a good thing, though. I would still say it's a good thing.
We're actually pretty caring underneath the, you know, bravado and claws.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and you can use all of those things for good if you choose to.
Yeah, so. Very protective partners. Just be on the right side of us.
Totally, totally. So definitely, like, as a teenager, I came out to my parents at 16. Awful experience, terrible. And I stayed in the closet for them. It was like a religious upset in my family. I come from a family of ministers, so it was a big dealio. And so staying in the closet, I had just like a series of secret relationships really until college. But I honestly, even before I had come out to my parents, I had had multiple boyfriends. And so I, like, my first kiss was with a boy. I was 14. And then I had had another kind of serious relationship at 15 and then another one at 16, who said the other person's name. And then kind of another one at 17. And yeah, and then in college, I had my first out boyfriend
And in terms of you being fake straight for your parents, was that a conversation that was had, or was it just sort of implied with the community you were part of?
No, it was a very intense conversation, or a series of conversations, I suppose. When I first came out to them, a lot of things were threatened, and like conversion therapy kind of ideology was used. But in the end, basically, it was kind of a mandate that I date a girl and that I publicly do that. And so that was part of their stipulations. And at the time, it's so funny because I'm actually such a rebel. And even during that time, I did rebel against them, but just in secret. But I'm kind of surprised looking back at myself that I didn't fully outwardly rebel against them, but I didn't. I was so protective of my parents. And even though it was such a shitty situation, I also knew that they were doing it because they didn't want me to burn in hell, essentially. And so in this weird, fucked up way, I thought it was from a good place. And so that made me feel oddly protective of them and didn't want anyone to think they were bad parents. So there were definitely a few times where I almost did say something to a couple of my mentors, but I chose not to because, yeah, I didn't want anyone to think they were bad parents or anything, which is so funny, like a child being so protective of their parents in that way. But I was, and their stipulation being that I dated a girl, yeah, I started dating a girl who was the beard. But then eventually, what is kind of strange about that story is that we were so close and we ended up like really getting through some really tough times together as like late teens. And so we did genuinely start dating, and like that's who I lost my virginity to. And like we really were dating for a section. And it was this just this weird relationship that she now identifies as a lesbian. At the time, she did not. But I think we were good people for where we were at the time together, for sure.
Wow. That's quite heartwarming, actually, in a way, that you found each other and maybe you were quietly going through a lot of similar things. Did you talk about sexuality between you?
We did. Like, she knew about the boyfriend, the name guy, because she helped set that up. So she knew about him. And she helped me through that breakup, which was a big deal because we were like a friend group, like a little Disney Channel original like friend group. And so when that happened, she was basically asked kind of like to choose a side, which is so like silly and high school-y. But anyway, she chose me. So whatever, fuck him wherever he is right now. But and that's really how we became closer. But yeah, we talked a lot about sexuality at the time. And then I was starting to figure out, you know, like I've never been a person that like really cared so much about labels. I definitely like, and I don't have like a type. Like there are definitely like things that attract me to people for sure, but I don't know if I would necessarily say I have like a singular type. And almost everyone I've dated looks so different and sounds so different. And they have, yeah, just, but there are some similarities for sure, but more like personal, like personality traits, I guess. And that was true even for her.
You know what, though? I want to pause on that because I sort of trust that more. Like I
100%
have never identified with the whole having a type thing. And part of the reason why I don't believe in it is so often it's led with visual stuff. And I'm like, I don't think that adds up to a relationship. They can look brilliant, but there's still stuff that you have to work through. There's still personality traits that arguably should rule them out entirely, depending what they are. So I'm like, that I can get behind. So what kind of trait?
I have been known to get with popular people, which is kind of funny, but people who are like really good in a crowd setting. That seems to be a common trait with almost everyone I've been with, which probably comes from the fact that I get really shy in big crowds. Mm-hmm. A lot of people like think I'm an extrovert, and sometimes I can be. I mean, honestly, kind of the same thing. I don't really believe in those labels 100%. Like, I'm like, sometimes I am, sometimes I'm not. But I tend to, in big crowds, like put on my like church persona, and I'm like nice, polite Tyler. And yeah. And so I've always gravitated toward like these people who are just super people gravitate toward. And so some of that has been like the bad boys for sure. I've dated a couple of them. I would say my partner now, though, is more on like the kind side of it. He is definitely a life of a party, but in a more positive way versus negative. So I found my way to kind of what I like, but in a positive lane instead of negative.
Yeah, I like that. And also it's an example of how there's that kind of opposites attract mentality, yes, which I don't quite believe in that cliche, but I do believe in like complementary traits. Makes sense. And it sounds like you're very happy for the other person to go and be the social one. But out of interest, in terms of his work, is he also a performer and working in the arts?
So when we first started dating, we were both musical theater majors. Mm-hmm. It's so fascinating, though, because we actually just talked about this. We are so different looking. Like, I am tall, lanky, white, and he is short, Mexican. Like, we're just very different looking. We're not ever going to go in for the same role. I'm way more passionate about acting, and he's way more passionate about dancing. So even like in the musical theater world, we had different like specialities. We had like, yeah, we were just never going for the same thing. So that was never an issue. I do think I might have struggles dating someone who is so similar to me. But honestly, knowing my personality, I wouldn't date someone that was so similar to me. So I don't think I would ever need to worry about that. But yeah, seeing like the couples who like look the same or who, you know, you're like, are they brothers? No, they're together. And you're like, oh, okay.
I have a friend that literally plays a brothers or boyfriends game.
God bless them, but I just can't do it. And also our personalities, that kind of like going off of what you're saying, complimenting each other, we really compliment each other in that way, even working wise. Like he worked on Don't Suck and helped in many aspects of the show. And we were able to work super intimately together. And did we fight? Sure, definitely. But was it like huge fights or was it anything major that we couldn't get over? No, not at all. And like we work together super well. And we do a lot of creative work together, actually. So that's something that I feel really fortunate about in my relationship now, is that we can work together, even in our own creative spaces, and do it really successfully.
That's very cool. The reason I asked was because it seemed almost like there might have been a balance where he's like the more extroverted in person, and yet through your work, you might seem like the more extroverted one, where they're almost 100%. Like that. Right.
Yes, 100%. Yes, yes, yes. Which, yeah, and I think that's shocking to everyone because, yes, as far as like if you go and like see a performance, I would probably come off as the more extroverted one for sure. But that is not typically the case.
And if we can track back a little bit to what you were mentioning about growing up and figuring out your sexuality within religion, do you mind sharing a bit of what that journey's been like?
Yeah. So that journey started really young for me. Looking back, I've always known that I have been attracted to male-identifying people, or masculine people. And that's as early back as I can remember, even like going back to like 4 years old, or like I remember like the live action Peter Pan with Jeremy Sumpter, and he has like the Ivy harness thing on. Like that was like, did it for me so intensely. And at a young age, though, something that I'm kind of appreciative of is that I did grow up in a house of ministers, because I was able to kind of see this divide between church life and spiritual life. I feel like a lot of people mix the two, and it's kind of hard to separate what is church and what is spirituality. And in other words, what is religion and what is spirituality? But when you are surrounded by ministers like I was, you really see how, and I don't mean this in a negative way, but church is really a performance in and of itself. You know, the sermons that are given, they're written every week, almost like a monologue, and there is a performance element to it. And the stuff that they have to do is very performative. And I always knew that there was this divide between going and singing a song and then hearing them in the home making fun of people singing that song at church that morning. You know, that helped me though, because I knew that as far as the church was concerned, being gay was bad, but I never thought that being gay was actually bad.
And when you say the church, do you mean your section of Christianity, or do you mean like your specific church?
Both. Yeah.
Right.
So I grew up in the Church of Christ, which is kind of like Southern Baptist, but worse is what I always say. It's super, super conservative. Women can't be in leadership. Dancing is thought of sinful. Music even is thought of sinful. So all the songs are a cappella. There's just a lot of rules. Yeah, a lot of rules and regulations, and pretty much everything's a sin. So it's a great, great uplifting environment. Not, but that's what I grew up in. And so, and honestly, that is really like the group thing that I was talking about. Like, I genuinely do catch myself falling into the church Tyler all the time, because how I coped is I kind of had this alternative personality almost that like fit in that kind of environment and was successful in that environment, but that wasn't genuine at all. But I definitely had like a church voice, and I had like a church way of standing because I didn't want to stand too femininely, and like all these little isms that you create to blend in and be a part of something. It, as a child, which is just so bizarre to think about, like how capable I was of doing that as a child, and the thought that went into it is kind of gross, honestly. But what I did though at a young age, when we got like our family computer, I would go and search at night when everyone was asleep, like, is being gay a sin? And all these studies and things about the Bible and homosexuality. So I started gathering information as early as 10 years of age about being gay in relation to religion, specifically Christianity. And so when I came out at 16, I felt so confident. Because as of that point, I'd had like, 6 years of study, essentially. And I read my Bible a lot. And, you know, I was a good little Christian boy and genuinely very innocent. Like, I never did drugs. I did not drink. Like, I was so pure. I only said, oh my gosh, instead of, oh my God. Like, I was like so pure, you know? So when I came out at 16, I was like, this is going to be no big deal because they're going to like see that like I'm such a good person, which I feel like a lot of gay people or queer, just LGBTQ people do, is like try to make themselves so perfect. So like being queer isn't negative. Okay. Like, well, they're so successful anyway, so it doesn't matter, right?
I'd never really quite thought about it like that. But I guess when you're so used to the rhetoric of it being a bad thing, being a negative, then you're almost subconsciously trying to counteract that with, I'll be perfect in every other way to balance this thing out. Of course, the problem being it's still kind of repressive because then you're being good because you think you're fundamentally bad. And in a way, it sort of links to what you were saying earlier about like all the rules and the finding a church version of Tyler that is strangely kind of reassuring for some people. So as restrictive and judgmental as that environment sounds, at the same time, you knew what all the rules were. And so I can see why then you go to like a fancy cocktail party in New York or whatever, and you're like, I don't know exactly what to do here. I don't know many people. And you drop into that mode because then you're like, well, I know how to behave if I go in this direction.
Yep. It's safe. Yeah. I mean, I definitely, it's like a defense mechanism almost. And when I did come out at 16 and it didn't go well, I thought like, okay, I can show this stuff to my parents, this research, and they will accept it. And they would not look at it. And I didn't expect that. I knew it wasn't necessarily going to be like roses and all happy for sure. But I wasn't expecting them to just not even read something that I gave them. But instead, I was asked to read like conversion therapy books and things like that. And I did. And so that was a big shock to me at the time, is that like it was just not even a possible thing to consider at all. And that was an ongoing thing. Home life was actually really terrible after that point, like from 16 to 18 when I went off to college, it was pretty bad. Like, we were yelling all the time at each other. There was definitely like a section where I thought of moving out. I didn't, but I thought about it. Definitely like suicidal thoughts. Like, it was pretty bad during that time. So when I did go off to college, I was really excited, actually, because as much as like I had like a disdain for religion, I actually still really loved religion, oddly. And I had like this sweet spot. It was very comfortable to me, religion, and specifically Christianity. And so when I did go to college, one of the classes I took my freshman year, my first semester, was a biblical literature class, looking at the Christian and Jewish Bible as a piece of literature, not a holy book. And that was really incredible for me and kind of validated all the research that I had done essentially since I was 10. And it really gave me just better language to explain my ideas and thoughts. And so like mid-semester, after having a really rough time with a few things, I broke up with my girlfriend at that time. I hated the school I was at. In the end, it ended up being just that I was upset with personal stuff, not really the school. But at that time, I thought I hated it. I decided that I just had to come out publicly. Like that was a thing that I just had to do. And so I did. But at first, I sent my parents a freaking packet of information. And
I knew that was coming somehow. Even when you told me about the research, I was like, did he walk in with a binder?
I emailed them this, like, I mean, I don't know how many pages, but it was a lot of pages. And it was constructed into three sections, very organized. The first section, I basically argued all the negative things in the Bible. So I was anti-women, anti-people of color, pro-slavery, all the rules that are in the Bible that we do not follow as Christians or as in the Jewish culture, I put in there. Then in the second section, I flipped that and used all biblical arguments to support homosexuality, to uplift women, to uplift people of color, all the things that I had named in the first. And then in the last section, still biblical arguments, said what I thought and believed about those things. And in the end of it, I said, I am going to come out. I hope that you will support me. I want to have a relationship with you. But if you still say no, and if you didn't read this at all, then I at least tried, and I'll feel good about it, essentially. So I sent that to them, and they did agree to read it, I think, because probably they felt forced to at that time because they knew I was going to come out. And so just a couple hours after I sent it, though, I got a call from my mom, who was just like sobbing, and she said that she understood. She had this complete change of heart. And my dad the next day called me after he had finished it, and he said a similar thing. And it really was wild that so many years as of that point of arguing and just awful relationship, that they would, after reading something, just have this like complete change. And anyway, they did though, and they switched to a gay-friendly church to me right after. And they have been so wonderful and supportive. And my partner that I have now, he lived with my parents and I for a while, and just a big shift for us. And they are major advocates for LGBTQ plus community now. And it's just very wild. But I do think it's a good thing for anyone out there who is struggling with religion specifically. It is hard to get people to acknowledge arguments or read arguments or just hear arguments or hear reasons. But I do sincerely believe that if someone cares about you, and if you can compile an argument, not around religion, but actually through religion, through whatever the issue is. So if it is religion or if it is another issue, whatever it is, to not argue around it, but to use that and to argue with it, I have a hard time believing people can see that stuff and say, I still am against you or against this identity. It's just really difficult, especially like in the packet, I used women a lot because I thought my mom, being a Slytherin, being like thoughtful about it, I knew my mom wouldn't stand behind the stuff that the Bible says about women. I just knew it. I knew it. I knew she couldn't see that. Actually seeing those words and seeing it put into context in today's world, there was no way she could stand behind that. And even the same with my dad, I didn't think that he thought of my mom in that way of just so belittling women and so misogynistic. I just sincerely don't believe that they are shitty people like that. And they came through and they were not that shitty of people. So that's good. But when you see stuff like that, it's just hard to really back it up, you know?
For sure. And it's something a little bit similar I use when having difficult conversations with friends or family myself, where oftentimes people just don't know what the counter argument is. You know, they've never seen it. Maybe they've never heard it. Particularly, you know, over the last year, more conversations around Black Lives Matter. It often is the most difficult conversations I've had are the people that don't have people of color in their life. Or if they do, it's, you know, only someone at work who they don't ever talk to about much, for example. And sometimes you have to start with something you know they're on board with. So if you know they have one area of equality they're really clued up on, if you can start with that and maybe bring some parallels in, then it's a lot easier for them to recognize, oh, I see how this would make somebody feel like this, because my equivalent as a woman or as a gay person, I can see what a similar thing would feel like for me.
And 100%.
It's so great to hear that your parents had that realization. But also what I've come to understand is that when people refuse to even acknowledge there is another side of things, it's actually such a weakness. As a Christian myself, I think there's only so good you can be as a religious leader if you don't acknowledge that other people have differing perspectives. You know, how are you going to grow your church community? How are you going to reach out to people that might be resistant to your work if you refuse to acknowledge really their existence, right? Because the lives that we all lead is our existence.
I mean, even looking back at when we first started talking about the snarky apologies of mine, that is something though that is really important to me, and probably why I do that now is, like, even when I am wrong about something and I hate that I'm wrong about something, which I do, I will go research it and I will apologize if I'm wrong. And I think that is really such a key, and I wish people just did that. If someone is saying, like, I believe this or this is true for me, then what does it hurt you to go and research that and just, like, look into it? Like, it literally doesn't hurt you at all. And like you're saying, like, are you that afraid of being wrong, I guess? Are you that insecure that you might be wrong?
Yeah, I think because that's a big part of it for a lot of people. Yeah. It's the balance of, like, they don't want to feel wrong, and equally, what's the incentive? And yes. With your parents, yes. It seemed like it took the incentive being important enough, i.e. their son, to outweigh that. But actually, what we can all instead do is practice being wrong and acknowledging it and researching like you do. And that's a way that then that'll lessen its effect. You know, once you get used to realizing you're wrong about things. And, you know, that's the case whoever you are. You know, you can talk to, like, academics at the top of their field. They don't have a clue about the scientists sat on the desk next to them. You know, like, the more intellectual you get, actually, the narrower your field gets. And I think certain things like religion, there's only so narrow your focus can get before you start losing touch with the people you're meant to be serving.
And we as humans just, like, in general, don't know that much. So especially when we're talking about, like, religion and spirituality, I mean, sure, we can have practices and we can have ideas of divine and spirit, but do we actually know anything? No,
Yeah. We
don't know anything. So it's just really silly to stand by these arbitrary rules when, like, what are they actually serving? Who are they actually serving? And yeah, I think we need to ask some questions like that for sure.
I mean, there's a whole argument of, is one lifetime even enough to make any kind of manageable dent on knowledge? And so instead, if we can, cliche as it sounds, like, lead with being kind, it's a better start.
Yeah, no, 100%. I agree with that.
And so then to contrast a little bit, you then ended up in New York. Very different place from Texas, very different experiences, I'm sure, to, like, the church community you grew up with. So what was it like then being gay in that environment?
It's interesting because my partner and I, so we moved in together super quickly. So we were living together throughout college, and then we moved here together. We've been through several life events together. And in our college town called Huntsville, and with a name like that, you know, it's probably conservative. And it was, we never held hands like on campus, and we didn't like show any like public affection basically toward each other because we were always afraid something might happen. And even at our college, like we personally knew people in the musical theater department that had been like beaten up and really targeted via hate crimes. And we missed those things, thankfully, but we were always just very aware that they did happen on campus. And so we didn't do any of that. So moving to New York, where we felt like we could, honestly, that's, I mean, I think even still kind of a transition, because the first several years of our relationship were based on not touching each other in public and stuff. And so like we do now, but I think it's still somewhat even like a conscious effort on our part to remember like, oh, we can do that here in some areas. And also I think like that's kind of the funny flip side. It's like people think New York is just like so welcoming, and sure it is as a whole, but there still are like bad areas. And like, you know, there are times where maybe it's not as safe to do something. And so I think as long as you like know your area, and that's, you know, there's like little gay places in Texas even where people can be out and proud and not worry too much. And I think the same is here in New York, but just like more of the city is like that. But it's been fun. I mean, it's been like a really great experience here. We joke all the time. Enrique is my partner, and Enrique and I, we joke all the time about how we have like almost zero friends who identify as straight. And it's almost true. It's actually kind of hard to like think of like, how many people do we know that actually identify as straight? I don't know. But
are you finding yourself counting like, this one's mostly straight? Do they get a take?
I know. This one's sometimes straight, I guess. And so that's kind of fun. But I mean, honestly, I think we have both evolved so much as far as identity and a culture. And so like, it makes sense that our group has as well. And we have such a awesome, diverse group of friends here. And, you know, we just last week, the clubs started allowing dancing again here. And you best believe we danced to Rain on Me. And it was the most epic, beautiful fucking thing ever. And it was so fun. And like little things like that, though, especially coming from the quarantine, I do appreciate so much of the little things of New York and what makes New York, New York. And I'm really excited to get to like experience the city kind of all over again. It's actually kind of like a cool gift we're being given right now to reappreciate this place.
Love it. Yeah. And we'll start wrapping up there then with our rules of the game. So have you got one in mind?
Yes. Actually, going off of that, I think is a great segue because so on my podcast, I talk a lot about spiritual fluidity, the idea that our spiritual relationships, because essentially they're relationships, should and will evolve through time and will change. And maybe I'll feel one way today and another way tomorrow, and that's totally fine. And how I kind of relate that to people is if you look at any relationship, they all change. The ones that are together for a long time anyway, they all change. And I think the negative thing to do in a relationship is to go in with a checklist and say, these are the things I want from a person. And then you end up falling for a checklist and not an actual person. But then when you're with that person, you realize, oh, they're a human being and they're not just this checklist and they have X, Y, and Z and they have this and they have that that I wasn't expecting. And then you feel like, oh, this isn't the person I wanted or I fell for. It's people like that that have a hard time evolving with their relationships. And I do think like it has been awesome to experience that with Enrique, to start as teenagers together in college and to move in together as quickly as we did. So living together for so long now and going from that to graduation, to living with my parents, to moving to New York, to these like careers that we have now. It is not the same relationship that it started as. And thank God it is not. I'm so thankful for that. We have evolved. And I think that at the core of it, we have supported each other evolving separately. And because of that, we have evolved together and allowed each other to change and to try things and to explore what we want to. And that means everything. I mean, even like we're both vegan now, even down to food, you know, like coming from Texas and like loving barbecue. And now we're like a year and a half into being vegan and we're like, yeah. So, you know, like who knows, you know, like what the world has to offer you as an individual, but then also as a couple, as a thruple, as a however many people you are together. I think to be open to evolution and fluidity is really, really, really important. And kind of necessary for longevity.
Oh, and I haven't given you any points yet this episode, so you get some now.
Boom, 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 make it rain.
Which is down to my remembering as opposed to you. You made so many excellent points in this show. I've got one that potentially links to this as well. So I think it's really important to admit what you don't know, particularly when getting into a relationship, particularly when that person comes from a different background to you, or if one of you is more experienced in terms of exploring a sexuality than the other, and these kind of things. But I guess really in general is admit what you don't know. So rather than you coming at it, let's say you're dating someone who's from a religious background that's new to you, then rather than you coming in and pretending you know what's happening and then you're trying to convince them and you're on opposite sides, instead let them know that you don't know that much, and then you can be on the same side and they can support you in understanding.
Yes, 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 yes.
There you go. So that's my rule of the game.
I really, really love that. And yeah, I mean, yeah. And then that allows you to evolve with that person and to grow and to have new identities, new ways of thinking, new everything, really. I mean, and why would you want less opportunities in your life? Mm-hmm. Like, why would you want to stunt your life like that? Growth is always the answer. Growth is always the answer, especially in your pants. Am I right? Ayo. Okay. Sorry.
All right. Well, we'll wrap up there. Thank you so much, Tyler. It's been great chatting. And people should go check out your podcast, Have a Blessed Gay. I should check out your series, Don't Suck, and the new book as well. Very busy.
Yeah, you're telling me. Thank you so much for having me. This was a blast.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. For more content, including extended ad-free episodes, you can join our Patreon, linked in the episode description. Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murtagh, with music by the brilliant Tessa Violet. Speak to you next Friday.